How often has somebody said, hey, Adam, you want a coffee? And you said no.
Yeah, it's not frequent.
No. No. Or interesting.
That too.
As it turns out. Okay. Well, then you be interesting.
Okay, I'm trying. This is my part. This is the part where I'm interesting right now.
Like your silence, you mean?
Did you hear it? I was telling you the story of my what's it called when this you're a superhero and you tell your story. There's a name for it. It's not your like evolution story. It's your origin story. I just told my origin story.
Mine says Da Vinci's Inquest on the back. Hello and welcome to episode 378 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me as always is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia.
What's going on, Adam in Vancouver?
I guess Disneyland. Disneyland's what's going on.
Are you're back?
Yeah, just got back.
But you haven't been yet.
I haven't been. But when this airs, we'll have literally just got back like hours ago. We're getting in late Sunday. This goes out Monday. So, yes.
I'm going to put it out a day early so everybody knows you're not back yet.
So confusing. But yes, haven't gone yet. But that's why we had to record early, because I'm going to be away at Disneyland for this next week.
Did you buy your plane tickets on Amazon?
No.
Next time, click through our site, buy them on Amazon, you'll help us out.
Okay. Is that a thing?
I have no idea.
Soon enough they will be.
How could they not be selling flights?
Yeah.
They should be. But anyways, for everybody listening... And
get your luggage. Get your luggage on
Get your
Amazon.
Luggage. People are doing it. People are clicking through our site and helping us out, and we surely do appreciate it. So you're talking... This is the California Disneyland.
This is the California Disneyland. I like the short flight, and Disney World for us on the West Coast is much further away. We did that once. I'm good with the Disneyland experience, and my family, my parents coming as well. So just a good old fashioned spring break family trip.
Where are you staying?
At Disneyland, the whole park is kind of lined with little hotels. Like you can stay like the Disney owns a couple of like resort hotels, which are incredibly expensive and not in my budget for this sort of thing. So when I say incredibly expensive, between $500 and $700 a night.
Whoa.
So that's out of my budget. So we just stay within like a 10-minute walk. We've stayed at all different places. This one's a new Hyatt we're staying at. It got good reviews. It's built in the last year, so it's all pretty new. And
that's $180 a night.
Yeah, I want to say it's around $200 a night from my recall, because we set everything up a while ago. But again, and much more budget friendly than the $600 or $700 a night to stay on the big name resort hotels.
I like staying in those hotels, the $700 ones, when someone else is paying.
Yeah, that would be better.
Yeah.
So doing that, but on a photo related note, the last trip that I took to Disneyland, which was not that long ago, less than 2 years. We went in October 2016, just took the little pocket camera. That's all I'm taking. Mm-hmm. But Disney has...
You had that camera that long now?
Yep. Wow. I have. Yeah, I've had it a couple of years now. So, so I'm just going to bring that because it's out of the way. And Disneyland just introduced just 6 months ago or so this new... I think I brought it up on the show before, but this new... system where you pay $10 per person per day extra, and it gives you a few different perks, one of which being that all the photos that they take in the park, so they have people walking around taking photos at different spots, certainly with the characters throughout the park, there's people that take your photo, and then they just basically scan it onto your ticket, and then you have free uploads or sorry, downloads of all those photos taken on that day for your extra $10 per person. You don't actually have to ever buy the, you know, the ride photos. Like if you go on like the roller coaster or whatever and it snaps your photo, you also get downloads of all those. So it's actually pretty decent. Now, you could cheat the system and just basically have one person pay for that. No, you can. And it's actually, there's nothing wrong with doing that. If your whole family's on it, you would just have that scan. But there's other perks that it's better for everybody to have it. So if it was just for the photos, you could get away with $10 per day and then download all your photos taken in the park. So it's quite a nice little addition. Just being that I'll be in a few photos this time, or at least I'm intending to.
Right.
And I don't have to pack the gear around. I'll just take my little pocket camera so that if I really want a photo, I can snap something.
Do you have a shoulder strap for that camera?
No, it's so tiny. It has a little wrist strap. So if I want to make sure I don't drop it, I can loop the little wrist strap around. But it seems like the shoulder strap would weigh more than the camera. The camera is literally tiny.
0 pounds.
Yeah, so I can't imagine putting a shoulder strap on it, but maybe somebody does. It'd be weird looking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have no stick time with that that camera.
Yeah.
So you're staying in Anaheim most of the time.
Yeah, the whole time.
And how long are you going for?
6 nights.
Are you going to get out to like Santa Monica or do something like that? Or
I don't know. I'd probably more stay in Anaheim, just being that LA traffic is just so bad.
Insane.
I'm not sure what we'll do, but we're not going to spend all day every day in the park. So there's going to be some other stuff. I was a little sad. Major League Baseball opens right when we're going down there, but the Angels open on the road. So that was kind of a little bit of a disappointment. So they're not around. The Dodgers are, their tickets are pretty expensive being that they were in the World Series last year. And again, it's LA traffic. Going from Anaheim to LA in traffic could take you easily an hour and a half. So I'm not brave enough to do that as much as I'd like. I've been to Dodger Stadium. I'd like to take Jack. He would like to go. He's got his, you know, Dodgers stuff.
Oh, but, are you saying
it's brutal. Like that's a brutal trek. Yeah. That's a 7-hour turnaround, like to go drive there, go to the game, turn around, come back.
Yeah, I know getting Chavez Ravine's not exactly easy. On the downside, Justin Turner just broke his left wrist.
In
preseason.
Oh, he did. Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Got plunked. And however, if you time it, I mean, if it comes down to you can go see a game when Kershaw's starting.
Well, I think he's starting opening day, but opening day, you can't even buy those tickets because LA did this thing where you have to get opening day tickets. You basically had to have some kind of pack. So, or you can go on StubHub and buy them for a stupid amount of money for crappy seats. And because that's kind of what I thought. I thought maybe worth it if it was opening day and you could see Kershaw, but you can't just pluck that game. And apparently, opening day is a big deal for a team that was in the World Series.
I guess so. Probably bigger in Houston, but
this. In Seattle has some budget nights, and Houston comes to Seattle kind of midweek, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the Houston games are budget nights. You can sit lower bowl to see the Astros in Seattle for like $45.
What? So do it.
But the Blue Jays, who come in August, you can sit in the worst seats in left field, a million miles from the field where we sat last year, and those are the same price as seeing the Astros up close. So
don't do it. Go see the Astros up close. It's going to be a much better game.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
Plus, Ichiro's back. I mean, I know this is going to be the baseball episode, but Ichiro's back in Seattle.
Okay, well, that's the clincher right there.
And that kind of come on, that's fun. Just watching that guy play, I love it. Even though he's my age, he's actually, I think he's a little bit older than me, or slightly younger. But either way, within a couple of months, I think.
Okay.
And he's still doing it in the bigs. So
yeah, it's pretty impressive. Yeah,
it's impressive.
He's the Yarmer Yager of baseball of Japanese baseball players.
But he has 3,000 hits.
Yeah, still the Yager of baseball.
Yeah. And started at 27 in the major league. So Yeah, likely would have broke Mr. Pete Rose.
So Jágr is the Ichiro of hockey?
I've always said it. Yeah, even back like 20 years ago before anybody knew who Ichiro was. Okay. I was all about that. So there you
but
go.
But the new, I really wanted to see, I don't even know how to say his name, but the new double threat Japanese pitcher slash power hitter for Shohei, I don't know how to say his name. Ohana or Ohani or whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it.
For Anaheim, but yeah, I was thinking that that would be super cool, but not going to happen because I'm guessing he might start for opening day. I'm thinking they're going to pump this guy like nothing else to sort of revive Anaheim as far as the fans are concerned.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty good 3-4-5. I'm assuming he'd hit in the probably five spot. I don't know. With Trout, Pujols, and him. That's, yeah, big time. All right, anybody still listening to Photo Show?
No,
they're not. All right, reminder for the monthly challenge for next week. It is Dutch Angle. Hashtag that. Hey Hosers or hashtag Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, and we'll likely talk about it on the show.
I'm hoping I got something in Disneyland with my point and shoot camera for that.
From a Dutch. Well, I would like it to be a Dutch angle that kind of says something, not just, oh yeah, it's off kilter. It's askance. It should be something that, yeah, it's kind of, is there still a Tomorrowland in Disneyland?
I'm not sure.
I'll bet you could do something sort of, if there's a Tomorrowland, you could do something with a Dutch angle in Tomorrowland.
I think there is. That's where the Autotopia is, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. I'm telling you, I'm laying a softball down the middle for you here.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's where I would shoot it. It'll look cool.
Okay.
I won't shoot mine there.
Okay.
Unless we head on over to the Paris Disney World, Disneyland Europe, but I'm not going to. Okay. And we're done. Did you shoot anything interesting? Well, I assume it's Disneyland.
Well, yeah, and I'll post some of those pics. If there's anything worth posting, I'll post a few of those pics.
I hope you go and see some of the beach stuff. I enjoy the beach down there. We spent I was in Los Angeles for 36 hours in November, and we're inland. Remember, I mentioned we'd been in Glendale in that area, but for much of the day, and then up what do you call it, Griffith Park.
Sure.
The observatory.
Oh, yeah. I remember when you did the proposal.
Right. Shot the engagement. And then, but we did spend the morning that I left. I went to Venice Beach, went for a swim, and then I went to the airport right from there. But it's kind of cool. I mean, it's a little cliche going to Los Angeles to go to the beach, but I like the beach. And so.
Well, and I think that, you know, we, like Lisa and I have been there in the past, and we've been to Santa Monica Pier and Venice Beach and Huntington Beach and done all that. I don't know that it's that exciting for my kids who live in Vancouver, and it's not like they don't see the beach or the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're a bit spoiled that way, whereas the swimming pool at the hotel is like the most exciting thing ever. And the fact that, I mean, the weather is supposed to be really nice, so we're kind of getting a bit of summer. I think it's, you know, between 25 and 28 that week that we're going to be there. Mm-hmm. I can see us just literally lounging at the swimming pool for large chunks of time. But yeah, to my parents and to myself and my wife, you know, the beach, it would be appealing. I'm guessing it's a long shot from happening though.
Here's the move. You go to Disneyland, bring your camera, bring your black background with you.
Oh, just lay it down behind Mickey.
Just go around, take pictures of your family with a black background and just blocking out Disneyland. You would look like such an idiot.
Yeah, it would be. People would ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, that would be very funny. I feel like you should do it. All right. Well, by this time you've done it. So good job, man.
Yeah, I wish you would have told me earlier.
Photo challenge for this week is black background, since you just bought it. You want to go first? Or you can go first this time.
Sure. There it is.
Which one you picking?
The one with whichever one was A. I think I had one that was marked A.
Well, I don't know that.
Just the batting stance.
The batting stance is the better picture.
Yeah, I just I posted the other one too, because I think last year for a photo challenge, I posted a picture of Jack with the white background with an almost identical pose, like just holding the bat on the shoulder. So I thought after I did the batting stance one, I thought I'm going to do the one just as a comparison to the one I had last year. And I like the fact that, you know, he just got new pants, new baseball pants, because kid is very tall. And so his last set of baseball pants are too short from last year. So we got him some new ones. He liked the ones with the red stripe. So I got him a red baseball belt to go with it, because I like the matching. Mm-hmm. And we don't know yet, because we haven't gotten our teams for baseball yet. So we don't know what color his jersey is going to be. But again,
definitely green.
His helmet that he's had since he was 4 or 5, whenever he started, was all torn up and too small. So he got a new helmet. Of course, he wanted red, so we got him a new red. And then went through the closet and found the Washington Nationals Harper jersey. And so we had the whole red ensemble minus the batting gloves, which are not red. Too bad. It would have been awesome if they're red and white too.
Yeah, he could have gone barehanded for the picture.
I kind of like, he was fine to go barehanded. I wanted to do the batting gloves. I just thought it was going to add something to it. Turns out it didn't really add anything to it. But yeah, that was my fault, not his. So he was happy to go barehanded. I like what the gloves look like more in the photo with the bat on the shoulders, like, cause the way light catches it, it looks a lot more interesting, but they just kind of fade away from the black. They're not, the light's catching more of the bat than it is the back of his jersey, the way I've set up the lighting, and less on his hands, because it's snooted and it's that specific. It catches so much more his helmet in the batting stance photo, but misses his hands a little bit. That's how specific the snooting was in this shot.
But, so who knows? Tell us about the lighting, because I do like what's going on. First of all, shooting baseball related, like shooting anything baseball related, like whether it's with the glove or with the bat, is really difficult to do, because you don't want to cut the bat off, so you kind of have to, you know, include the top, the, you know, you have to go a lot higher with the headroom than you normally would, so it doesn't look right, but the bat's there. In this case, he has the bat laying a little bit too low, in my opinion, but we'll talk about that off mic. But so it's very difficult to do generally. And then with a glove, when you have a glove, like, what's the pose? You know, you're just gonna. It's one pose. You stand there with the glove kind of on your chest, like, and looking tough. That's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not much you can do, and they can't throw the ball in the air. It doesn't look natural. Yeah. So right out of the gate, this looks really good. How did you get this lighting?
So it's similar to the photos from last time. Again, it's snooted speed light behind camera right. So that's getting part of his head, part of his arm. Obviously, the light on the left side of his face, so camera right side of his face. Mm-hmm. And then the other light is, again, the big strobe that's got a grid on it to get the bat, his back of the jersey, that's lighting that. And then another flash in the softbox gridded again to get feathered across to get a little bit of light on the front of his jersey, but it's turned down enough that you're going to get, you know, his lighting his leg, the front of his jersey, and kind of the underlit side of his face. Mm-hmm. So three lights, that's it.
So it's down low, you're saying.
What's that?
The light in the front.
Yeah, it has to be to get underneath the brim of his helmet. Otherwise, it's going to completely darken out the top of his face.
Right.
So it's basically right at that height. You see where the catch lights are. So they're the catch light level. So it's basically just above the brim of his helmet. Mm-hmm. And then feathered across the front.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this looks great. Great example of a black background, but I like the rear sort of lighting. That's the, I mean, we talk about key and then fill and kicker, but your kickers here, your backlighting are essentially your key lights in essence. And then a little bit, you know, on the front. I like it. It's really hard. It's really hard to light with a baseball hat or a helmet. So that, so the fact that you can get up under his, you know, where his both light both of his eyes is really hard to do. And you've done it here, and all around looks like it's a good photo.
I think it helps too, depending on the kind of helmet you have. Like, this is not a glossy helmet.
Yes.
And so I think that makes it a little bit easier. I would think that if you had a shiny helmet, this would be very, very difficult as far as, you know, making the light look good. So if someone's buying a new helmet for their kid, buy the low gloss helmet.
Agree. Just for the photos.
Yeah, for the photos you're going to take. Plus, I just like the look of them better.
They do look way, way better. Yeah. I've been in the market for one. I've been trying to find one, but for myself, but cannot find the single ear flap ones anymore. They're hard to find.
Okay.
And that's what I would like. I actually wouldn't. I mean, you care? I would probably wouldn't wear a helmet if I didn't have to. But they make you wear a helmet,
right?
Or I would go the Aussie Smith and just the no ear flaps.
But yeah, those they look weird though.
Yeah, but if you're good like Ozzy, it's all right. If you're the Wizard of Oz, you're good to go. Listen,
what about, not Joe Carter, what was the other
John Olerud?
No, for the Expos.
Oh, Gary Carter.
Gary Carter, yeah, I just always remember him.
They're not brothers, are they?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. yeah, I think, yeah, that's right, you're right, he wore one too, but he had the big afro underneath.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, big 70s hair.
Big, yeah, the big, what was the, yeah, the, I can't remember the name of that, but regardless.
Your photo.
Well, look at your second photo, just real quick.
Okay.
It's coming up on my screen, on both my screens. It's actually the black, this is where I can actually see the black background, because it's actually, for whatever reason, it's much lighter, the background.
I can't see it on my, but my monitor has been a long time since calibration, so.
Right. I checked on two monitors just to make sure. And I can barely, on the darker monitor, I can barely see it. On my lighter monitor, it's apparent. And then on your other image, it's just a hint of it. On my light monitor, I can see the background, but I know that's my monitor. And then on the other one, it disappears entirely. But there is a difference between the two, is what I'm getting at.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that's on you.
I have to edit that a little better, closer.
I have to
calibrate my monitor, I guess.
Yeah, it's probably not going to show up for most people, but the occasional person, it might. So it's just something you might want to be aware of, like you're getting a little bit of spill on the background in that one for some reason.
Okay.
Probably not going to matter. All right. So I saw your image and thought, oh, I'm gonna try to duplicate this. And essentially, that's what I went for. I don't have, my kids don't have batting helmets. And so I went with the old school. Everything's old school here.
Mm-hmm. Is that your hat?
No, that's hers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was mine. It was mine. She wears it now.
It looks like it's definitely been worked on by you.
Oh yeah, I've beat the absolute crap out of that hat.
Yeah. And just the curve and everything. I'm like, yeah, that's been worked by Al.
Yeah, I'm not a flat brimmer.
Neither am I.
Some of the kids in my son's kindergarten are showing up with the head wrap on, like the sort of like not a toque, but not a do-rag, but something in between.
Okay.
With the flat brim, the giant flat brim hat over top.
Oh, no.
These are 4-year-olds.
Oh, no.
There's a number of them are all wearing this with the sticker on the hat still and doing the flat brim. And I just like... said to my son, I'm like, don't even think about it. I will smack that off your head.
I slightly blame the hat stores because now the ratio of flat brims to regular kind of curved brim hats is about 2-1.
Yeah, you go ahead with your hands and just curve them. Like all the hats I ever got as a kid.
But the ones they're making now are ridiculously stiff and the brim is a little shorter. And I thought that too. And I'm like, I don't think it looks right. To curve that same hat, the material is different. Like the actual top part is different than the ones that come with the more curved brims to start. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. Jack is a hat aficionado, so he's probably got. Well, he just bought another one the other day. He's probably got 10 hats in his rotation.
Right.
Of all varying different sports. For his birthday, he picked out a Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl hat, which was quite nice. But he's all about the curved brims. But yeah, we're just kind of looking through. He had this hat in mind, and we're like, man, it's hard to find hats that aren't flat brim. Football, fortunately, there's more curved hats. It seems largely a baseball thing.
Yeah, love it. Not a fan. Anyways, the kids on the team do it too. On my team, I'm like, God, come on, guys. What are you doing here? What are we doing?
Is there a major leaguer that has a flat brim hat out there?
Started it. There's a couple of pitchers who I forget who it was. It was a couple of throwers wear them off a flat brim and off to the side. That's their move.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can think of someone in the, but he had the weird thing underneath his hat as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Moving on.
Who it was? Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my daughter. She and she actually does have a jersey. I was gonna put the jersey on, but as of recording this, we're a few days before Easter,
mm-hmm.
and she will receive her Tubingen Hawks actual game jersey for Easter. It's an Easter present I bought for her and for my son.
Okay.
Both number 8, of course.
Okay.
Daddy. So I'll probably retake this photo with the jersey on just so I can light the back like you did. Like that was actually, I really liked that.
So you can see the name and number in that, yeah.
No name. We don't do the names. I'm not a huge fan of the names on the jerseys myself, ever. But
okay.
Personal choice.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, so I did very, very similar. Had the old school, again, no batting gloves. She wanted to show off her nail polish probably. The old school wooden bat and a little bit. And see, your son has a much more Bryce Harper stance, actually. And my daughter goes Griffey. So, you know, a little more upright. That's how daddy hits. So there's that. And that's cool. Essentially the same lighting as you. I got, well, except for two speed lights, one on behind, one on each side, sort of doing that side lighting.
Yeah.
And then just a light. Light key, I guess not really key, but a light softbox, gridded softbox in the front on very low power just to add a little light into her face and whatnot.
Yeah. It's good.
That's very similar to yours. The look on her face, she's not as into it as your son. She was looking to be done, which is why you can see that shadow going across her left eye.
Yeah,
I was trying to kind of work that in, and I couldn't quite get it right when her patience ran out. And so this was like the last shot I took was the best version of it. And just to sort of minimize it, rather than doing dodging and burning, which wouldn't have looked right, I ended up taking the catch light that was in her eye, her left eye, and just doubling it in size.
Right.
Just to make it a little, just to stick out a little bit more, because there was almost no catch light, and it just heard that left eye just disappeared in the darkness. It just didn't look right.
Right. Yeah. No. And it doesn't. I mean, yeah. It's totally fine. It doesn't look artificial that the catch light is there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's with the black background. That's the full on exact same setup as you. I did take a safety shot. I wasn't sure if I was going to have time to shoot that one. So I took the safety one first, again, self-portrait, because hey, why not? But this is not a black background. This is just me completely killing the background, the maroon background, by hammering that shutter speed down to 1/1000th of a second, mm-hmm. which with the X100F is, you know, easy to do. You can sync with the leaf shutter. You can sync that, no problem. And then just one snooted soft light not a softbox, a one snooted strobe on the camera left. And snooted to keep it off the background and just onto me.
Right. Yeah. No, I like it. It's good. It's simple. It's a cool look.
Yeah, I brought up that's really why I posted it, is I decided, you know, it was, the image was fine as it was, but in this case, I decided to add a layer for a levels layer in Photoshop and sort of bring the blacks up to sort of make them milky instead mm-hmm. of just a harsh black. We kind of made them so that it sort of blends into the pea coat and added a layer of grain to it just to kind of add that, just to scuff it up a little bit.
Sure.
So it's a fun little thing, I can't believe I just said fun little. It's kind of a cool looking process, which I might use on another subject. All right.
Okay.
Topic this week is a guy named Sean Kent got in touch with us and said he's a photographer, Canadian fella, roughly our age, military guy, et cetera, et cetera. And he has his passion, aside from photography and the Navy, is he has a spoiler alert. It's he talks about it in the interview. He's in the Navy. And so one of his passions is he's always wanted to develop an app, a photo app. And he got in touch and I said, you know what? I'd like to hear about how does one go about developing a photo app? There's got to be a lot in it. And this isn't an app that takes photos, but he'll actually explain it in the interview, what the app is about. But he's a very interesting guy. So I urge you to have a listen to my interview with Sean Kent.
So what would you like to know? I can obviously tell you a little bit about myself.
That's where we're starting. I even wrote it down. Who are you? Where are you from? Everybody wants to know.
Yeah, that's pretty complicated. I was born, as we discussed, in Kamloops, British Columbia. But I am a border child. I am the product of the second mistake my parents made. The first was getting married. And so my parents split up and I bounced around in the States. My dad's American, and in BC, where my mom's from. Mm-hmm. And kind of a lost puppy in my teens. So I went and I joined the military in 1998, actually. And since that time, I've had the good fortune to travel the world with the Canadian Forces. I'm actually a photographer in the military, if you can believe that's a job. And that's what I've done for the last 20 years, for the most part, is just sort of bounce around the world and take pictures. And currently working in Ottawa, my official title is Public Affairs Branch Chief Warrant Officer, which is kind of a fancy way of saying that I'm kind of the senior image tech, is what we're called in the military. I'm the senior image tech in the Canadian Forces.
So when you joined the Forces, I wasn't sure what you said. You're in the CAF. I wasn't sure if that was Canadian Air Force or just Canadian Armed Forces.
Canadian Armed Forces. Yeah, sorry. Us military guys have to be careful with our acronyms.
Right. Well, I know the RCAF, right? So.
Yeah, Royal Canadian Air Force. Yeah, so I'm in the Royal Canadian Navy. Mm-hmm. That's the uniform I wear. I'm a sailor. My first deployments were aboard ships in support of what was then called Operation Apollo. Basically, after September 11th, I was on ship. And so most of the imagery, if you Google me, will be a pictures of ships in the Gulf region, the Gulf of Aden, Gulf of Oman, and the work Canada was doing there. Oh, sorry about that. Let me kill my messenger here.
Okay.
Yeah. I traveled around doing that. And then I disappeared for like 7 years. I worked with the Special Forces, not as like a ninja, but more like the nerd in the van. Mm-hmm. And worked with them for 7 years, and that wasn't so much photojournalism as it was more like intelligence-based photography and doing that kind of stuff. And that's basically it.
Did you join the Forces as a photographer, or is that something you picked up once you
got Well, in? It's funny. I was trying to be in the infantry, and my vision isn't very good. They wouldn't let me shoot a rifle, but they gave me a camera instead. And so that's how I ended up as a photographer in the military.
I see. And so they trained you how to take pictures?
That's right. Yeah. So we do, back then we did three courses, but now we do one course. It is kind of like recruiting ad. We do one course to get people up to speed after they join the military, and then they join our occupation. And then they become basically photojournalists or intelligence photographers across Canada and around the world.
And how many photographers are in the Canadian Armed Forces?
At the moment, we're sitting around just below 250. And recruiting numbers are kind of weak in the Canadian Forces at the moment. We're trying to get more people in the door. And for what it's worth for your listeners, there's a pitch. If you're young and keen and like to travel the world and take pictures, I'm sure we'd love to have you.
Well, on a side note, it's actually one of my very few regrets in life is that I did not join the Armed Forces when I was younger.
Oh, really?
Or at all, yeah. It's one of those things that, at the time, when I got out of high school, though, there was a little thing called the Gulf War, the first one.
Yep, that's right.
So that kind of wasn't great for recruitment at the time. But then after that, I just never did, and kind of, I wish I had. And in fact, the Navy would have been, in my opinion, from the outside, would have been what I would have chosen. I feel like, now correct me if I'm wrong, photography aside, you can learn an awful lot in the Navy that you could apply in the rest of your life.
Oh, I certainly think so. I think no matter what trade you are in the military, you learn life skills for sure. I joke that I joined the military because I didn't have any discipline in my life. I'd been fired from a hosting job at the IMAX Theater at Canada Place in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been fired from that job because I was kind of just like a guy that didn't really care about too much. And I actually joined to sort of get my life on track. And the plan was 3-6 years, and flash forward 20 some odd years later, and here I am still in it, and I probably got about another 20 to go.
That was exactly the reason I wanted to join. I was kind of, you know, aimless and lacked discipline. Discipline kind of came much, much later in life.
Yeah, same for me.
Oddly. So, I mean, that was one of those things I should have done. But again, looking back, I probably would have.
Okay, yeah, I always say I won the lottery. I mean, I joined the Canadian Forces, which is awesome on its own. But I also got to do it as a photographer. And that's like, there's no better job in the military.
Right. Okay. So now you learn to be a photographer, and now you're taking stuff. You're taking pictures for the military, but also on the side.
Yeah. So basically, as I've moved up, so as a senior guy, I'm kind of like a gerbil at the email pellet feeder these days. I don't get out to shoot for the job anymore. As I like to say, I hung up my guns, and those days are behind me. And now I sort of send people away to do my old job. So in that, as I sort of got away from the photojournalism side of things, I still had a passion and love for photography. And I ended up becoming more of a landscape photographer, mostly because I'd done the photojournalism thing, and I've never really been into like glamour photography or models and all that drama. So I really like the quiet spaces, the abandoned houses, that kind of thing. And so I started shooting that on the side, and that's basically what I've done for probably the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, so that I just keep that fire going in me for photography.
And what do you shoot with?
I have a Canon 5DSR, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's not quite a like the D5 equivalent or the Canon Mark, whatever it is. I don't really pay attention to the brand names, but it's got a high resolution, and that really, you know, suits it well for the type of photography that I do.
Is that your own, or is that the military issue?
Yeah, I shoot Canon, actually. I like to say that I'm sort of by brand. I shoot Nikon in the military, and I shoot Canon on the civvy side. And the reason I do that is so that there's never any ambiguity if I'm using taxpayer paid for equipment versus my own equipment. Because I don't sell my imagery anymore, but I used to. Now I give my imagery away under Creative Commons licenses.
Okay, so there could have been a conflict had you snapped something with a taxpayer funded camera.
Exactly. Yeah. So I've always shot Canon on my own, but I'm still a Nikon guy at work. So I actually know more about Nikon cameras because we do all the buying and stuff for the camera gear.
Okay. Is there a reason that they shoot Nikon? I mean, I'm not really brands. I mean, I shoot Canon myself, but that's just by accident. I don't really have a preference either way. Just curious, was there a reason that they went Nikon?
Well, when in the early days, because I was there for the transition from film to digital, and I can tell you that our occupation used to shoot on Speed Graphic and Hasselblads and FM2s. The old Nikon FM2 is actually the camera I learned on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when digital came out, the first digital cameras we saw were the Kodak models, the DCS-420s, I think, or maybe that's just what the file names were. So those were the first digital cameras, and they had an Nikon mount, so all our lenses still worked on them. They were the micro 4/3 or sensor back then, but you would use 1.5 crop factor, blah, 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 technical. So then that sort of evolved to the D1X, and that was the camera that I shot with predominantly during the start off to the work we did for the war in Afghanistan, and D2Xs, D3Xs, and it's just sort of just carried on from there. And now we're shooting D5s, and the new 850 has got us really interested.
And early on, when you first switched over to digital, how did those early models hold up in Afghanistan and Iraq?
We were never in Iraq.
Right. That came out of my mouth when I realized who I was talking to.
Yeah. So the biggest challenge in shooting in those environments is, without a question, is the dust, right? The dust in Afghanistan is like a talcum powder.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the challenges there. And then in the Navy, you also have all the saltwater corrosion. Like we literally rust out the mounts for our flashes on our cameras sometimes.
Right.
And in those environments, like the cameras suffer. So we have, we take better care of our camera equipment than just about anything. We treat it almost like our weapons. We clean our weapons every day. We clean our cameras every day. And as long as you're doing that, all those cameras hold up pretty well. Even the early models did a pretty good job. They're pretty well sealed.
Hmm. Okay, so now on to the app. You got in touch and said that you've created an app.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, the backstory on the app is I don't know if you're familiar with Nova Scotia, but there's a location called Cape Split, and it's basically a geological formation that juts out into the Bay of Fundy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little difficult to get to. It's like an 8-hour hike. It's a well-maintained trail, but it meanders up and down. And when you're carrying 50 pounds of camera gear, it's a bit of a job to get out there. And when you end at the end of the trail, the Cape Split Trail, you find yourself standing on top of a cliff, and you can look down and you can see the beautiful rocks that sort of jut out of the ocean there. But you can also see there's a beach there, but to get to the beach, you're probably going to kill yourself because it's like a 500-foot sheer cliff drop. So I'd gone out there for a hike to take pictures of it again. And I'm standing there and I'm just thinking, like, there's got to be a way to get down to the beach. And I pull out my cell phone and sure enough, I had 4 bars and I started searching the internet. I couldn't find anything. And then I remembered that I go geocaching with my kids a lot. And whenever I've gone geocaching, I'm always struck at like how a lot of the hidden caches, if you're familiar with geocaching, you find like little treasure boxes.
Mm-hmm.
I was always struck by how a lot of those treasure boxes are like these beautiful locations. So I always bring my camera. So I pulled out the geocaching app and sure enough, there was a geocache probably about 2 kilometers back that said little Split Beach Trailhead. And so I followed the route to the geocache and I got there and sure enough, there was a path down to the beach. And then I was running across the rocks trying to beat the sun because I was there for sunset. And I just took pictures. I was really, really pleased, was absolutely amazed by it. And when I was driving home, I was sitting there in my car on the drive back to Sackville where I live. And I was sort of struck that, you know, there should be an app for this that sort of tells you where the good places to take pictures are. And I went searching on the App Store and I couldn't really find anything. There's something in Singapore that I guess kind of does the same thing, but it's only for Singapore. And then there's also a great app called Photo Scout that is great, but it's just like you can tag your own spot and that's it. You don't see any other locations. It kind of dawned on me a little bit later on when I was driving around and I was like, we drove by this abandoned house and the light wasn't right, but I wanted to come back to it. So I was trying to get my wife to scramble down the address as quick as possible. And she didn't get it done. And then it just like this eureka moment hit me. And it's like, this has to be an app. There has to be a way for all the photographers around the world to sort of share their local knowledge to some degree and identify all the great places to take pictures, whether that's abandoned houses, whether that's scenic views on a beach, windmills, lighthouses, like it'd just be so handy to have that in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but I've spent weekends driving around aimlessly or searching the internet for places to shoot. So I went down to an app development company called MindSea in Halifax, and they're like, you know, the top level at Google for the very best. And we sat down and walked through what would be involved in building the app and sort of, to cut a long story short, flash forward 6 months later and way too much money invested. We are going to have an app launching probably around April 6th. We haven't exactly pinned down the launch date.
Mm-hmm.
That is effectively that. It's a mapping tool, and each location is sort of its own entity within the app. And I'm hopeful that it becomes kind of like a Pokemon gym. I don't know if you're familiar with the Pokemon app game.
I am. Yep.
Yeah, people battle for the location. So I thought it'd be really cool if photographers also sort of battled to have like the hero shot of the location, sort of the feature shot for that location.
So by the hero shot, I mean, well, first of all, to break it back down, this is sort of, I know how this applies to me personally. Like I try to keep accurate. No, I don't keep accurate notes. I wish I kept back to the discipline thing.
Make it easy for you.
but there's certain times of day when I'll have passed a good spot and think, oh man, like that light is amazing. I need to come back with my camera at 5:27. In April, I know that this is going to be good light. And so I would like to keep accurate notes on that or maybe snap something with if you have an iPhone or something like that, just so you can come back and shoot.
And that's exactly the concept. So if you're out there and you see that location, you just take a picture of the location and upload it to the Pixio app, and it'll be there forever and all time, and you can come back whenever works for you.
Now,
we vet all the pictures, though, to make sure that they're actually useful. So, because if you go on like the Flickr gallery, for instance, and you search the map there, because I think we've all done that, you find a lot of pictures of cats and homeless guys, and it's like they're right. Not going to be there when you get there. So that's part of the reason why we make sure that we vet all the locations and make sure they're actually good photo locations for our users.
Well, see, for those reasons that you just mentioned, I have not really gone on the Flickr map.
Yeah, it's a pain.
Yeah, it's not something for me. But also when I go to travel somewhere, like I go to a city I'm not familiar with, this sort of thing would come in handy because I like to be places.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's great. It's great. You want to see the Brandenburg Gate when you're in Berlin. Of course, there's all these main things, but there's a whole lot of other sort of the subculture thing that you want to maybe shoot that other people have already shot and find interesting and can recommend.
And that was the whole idea, is it's a way for us to sort of provide local knowledge to traveling photographers as well. Like your abandoned warehouses it may not be just like landscape photography. If you're a wedding photographer or a glamour photographer, you want to shoot a model in like an abandoned, to use the military, like radio station. If there's one in the area, it'll be in the app. And we've built in categories to help the particular type of photographer sort of separate, the buildings, the architecture shots from, say, the abandoned houses or the lighthouses and that sort of thing as well.
And so when you go to search, on one of the pins that are there, or how does it work in terms of on the map? What do you see?
Yeah, so when the app launches, we're going to have what we call coalesce pins. So basically, if you're zoomed out on the whole globe, you'll see pins all across the globe with a number in them. And then as you zoom in, that breaks out to that number of pins the closer in you get. So it might say like 10, and then as you zoom in, it breaks out into 10 different pins. Each one of those pins is a photo location that we've added to the app. Excuse me. And you can then click on one of those pins, and a drawer sort of appears at the bottom and shows you the hero shot of the location, what the best picture we have on file at the moment is of that location. And then you can swipe left and right, and you'll dance around the map and go to all the different locations and pick one that you like. And then when you find one you like, you can hit the heart and it gets added to your favorite list. And you can actually plan your whole photo outing from your couch at home, get into your car, and then go to all the places you favorited for the day.
In the most efficient order.
Yeah, so it's based on proximity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little unusual when you start to do it because it seems to bounce around the map a lot. But the basic concept is this one's like, 2 kilometers away from you. The next one's 3 kilometers, next one's 4 kilometers. And it treats that as a big circle. And you sort of go from the nearest to the furthest.
Mm-hmm. Based on your GPS.
That's right.
Wow. Okay. But so for the hero shot, that's like I click on let's say there's, Peggy's Cove you've shot.
Yeah, the own piece of what a bragging right.
Which is I've actually been there, on the day of the hurricane, as a matter of fact, like 2003 or something like that.
Yeah.
We were there. I was there for a wedding and we obviously everyone says you go see Peggy's Cove, why not?
You were there for Hurricane Juan in 2003? Is that
I was there.
Wow, that's crazy. We actually got our third floor apartment building flooded out during that hurricane, and I was out shooting for the next week all the recovery efforts of the military.
Ah, okay. So, we knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And so we said the wedding was the day before, and so we had an extra day in around Halifax, and we went to Peggy's Cove, and we all thought, being naive that we are, we thought, oh, yeah, it'd be great. Imagine if it hits while we're out at Peggy's Cove. That'd be cool. Wouldn't have been cool. So it came a couple of hours later it hit. And so we were actually back in Halifax and I was, I thought, well, it's Halifax. You know, this isn't a shanty town. You know, well, there was damage. I think only one person died, and that was an ERT guy who got hit by a tree, from what I remember.
Yeah, I think that was, I seem to remember the same. Yeah,
but anyway, across the street, the third floor apartment, I think it was, they had all their windows blown out, and their mattress had been sucked out the window onto the street.
Yeah,
so I got to see that. Anyways, so you shoot, you know, let's say you have 20 user submissions for Peggy's Cove, for example. The hero shot is you pick what you consider to be the best one, and that stays up until someone else takes a better one. But if I want to go look at Peggy's Cove, I'm going to see Joe Schmo's picture with his name on it.
Yeah, so basically the way it works is this first iteration is what we call the MVP, or the minimum viable product, right? So we're putting out the app with the locations, and you can take a picture at Peggy's Cove, add it to there. Mm-hmm. And the way it's going to work is that, you know, other users will see your picture in the gallery for Peggy's Cove, and they can like them. And the picture with the most likes wins.
Right.
Now, down the road, what we want to do is make that more of a game for photographers. And when we, you know, hopefully have a little bit more money, and we'll have a desktop version. And in that desktop version, you'll be able to like and share the gallery pictures. And then we'll develop some sort of algorithm that awards the hero shot based on the number of likes and shares and tweets and interactions with the image.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's a good, that's a good way to, I know we've talked on our show a number of times, and sort of the way things, you know, the way the nature of the business is, or not even just the business, the way nature of photography is you always hear about, yeah, you get to work for the exposure.
Yeah, exactly. And on that point too, it's very important to me as a photographer that everybody gets proper attribution. So we've actually got two sort of usernames in the app. So the username that you sign up with might be, I don't know, you know, Wookie number 33. Mm-hmm. But you actually set your own credit line. So your credit line can be, you know, twohosers.com or .ca. I forget which one you guys use, but that can be your credit line. You can put whatever you want in there. And that way we make sure that anytime we display the image in the bottom left-hand corner or bottom right, I forget which one it is off the top of my head. There will be your full image credit there. That's really important to me. And I wanted to make sure that people weren't like watermarking pictures like crazy, because we want to have a nice clean interface too.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I saw specifically on the, I read your whole press release. I read the info about the app. I saw specifically no cats.
Yeah. That's exactly it. That's the whole curation part. So my wife is a very much an amateur photographer, whereas I do it professionally. But she's been around me enough that she knows like what I consider a good location, and she has her own opinions too now on good locations. So basically what she does in the company is if you add a location, she's going to see it, and she's going to verify that the GPS coordinates that you sent with the image are accurate, mm-hmm. as well as the title and the description sort of captures well what the location is. And more importantly, that it's not a picture of your cat. And I love cats. Actually, I don't. I'm allergic to them. But but I don't want people to open up the app and then there's a picture of a cat. I hate that when I see it on photo maps. I want to make sure that every single location in this app is like a place I would want to go shoot. So that no matter, like you said, you get in your plane, you land in Italy or France, you see the Eiffel Tower, that's in there for sure. But also that, you know, like abandoned subway station that only the locals know about.
Right.
That's in there too. And that's the real value. And we want to make sure that the users are contributing to the app. And you know, again, we're talking down the road, but we want to have things like Pixio points where we're actually rewarding the users for their contributions and participation in the app, either by providing them sort of discounts to their subscription or even gift cards and that sort of thing down the road.
Now, I was just going to mention that at the 23-minute mark is probably the worst time to mention the name of the app. Probably is right at the top. And I will mention, when I introduce this on the actual episode, I'll make sure Adam and I lead in with the fact that the name of it is?
Pixio. And that's a combination of Pixel and Geo. And I could not believe that it was available.
No, I was kind of, I'm surprised myself.
Yeah, and the X is in the middle because the X marks the spot. That's what we like to say.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's why icons and X. That's why all our branding is X's, because the X marks the spot.
What is the app building experience like?
You know, that's interesting because I've done some software development for the military, specifically with building dams, digital asset managers for imagery. And I'm also a web developer. Like I made the websites and all that sort of stuff, but I'm not like a pro at it. I just do it on the side. I've even had a podcast for a while. But at the end of the day, this has been an incredibly educating experience. The company Mindscene Halifax, if I can pitch for them, have been wonderful at holding our hand through this whole process and guiding us and more importantly, sort of scoping out what actually needs to be in the app. Because when you show up, you have like this whole shopping list of things you want to put in, like the Pixio points I talked about. And I really, really wanted, if you use the photographer's ephemeris, right, you can see which way the sun is going to set and rise okay. in that app. I wanted to put that into Pixio. I wanted to include golden hour and blue hour and all that sort of information for the photographer. And we're probably going to add that down the road. But for now, it's just like weather at the location. But they help you scale that back and come up with something sort of realistic just to get the app out there. And then that gives you like a version 2 to work towards. So you can like expect in version 2, we'll add like the golden hour times in each location so that you know when you need to be there, when you need to leave and all that good stuff.
And what's your target market? You looking for pros, looking for amateurs?
A little bit of both. So one of the reasons that we put a subscription cost to it is because we didn't want just everybody to use it. We want this to be somewhat boutique and exclusive to the photographer community. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely the pro photographers. We're targeting them 100%. But I've been in a lot of photo clubs. I was part of the Barry Photo Club and the Sackville Photo Club. And those photo clubs are full of older retired folks, and they, believe it or not, are just clamoring for photography apps. And that's really like, you know, one of my near to my heart sort of target markets is that sort of over 50 photographer set that love to do nothing better with their retirement than to go out and take beautiful pictures. And then conversely, we have the younger generation they love like the abandoned places and the sort of really dynamic adventure locations at the top of mountains and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're really targeting sort of both sides. It's ironic. It's our age group sort of in the middle that, you know, is making a living doing this, that we're not targeting as much because we think they're going to come to it naturally.
Well, I see a huge, use for this for like, for example, wedding photographers. I mean, that is great, especially in big cities like Vancouver when, you know, where do you shoot in Gastown? Where do you shoot in Yale Town? And there's a few popular spots and there's probably some spots that people don't want to share, but we don't really care about those people who don't want to share. I could do without them, but you know, just, hey, that's a great background. And if you're going to plan your, you know, your wedding shoot, well, all of a sudden you realize, okay, you know, at 3:30 on this day, the light's going to be such and such here. That's a great way to be really efficient. And the other part that is actually, I think, a really smart idea is the exclusivity of it.
Yeah.
Is that, like I saw your some of your suggested prices that were built in, and I thought my initial reaction was, well, you are going to exclude a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
There's two reasons for the price point. The first is that, make no mistake, like we have spent the last 5 months, 8 hours a day going through every Creative Commons image we could find on the internet and public domain to tag it and make sure it's good to go. And that's going to continue. Like every submission for a location, we're going to verify and vet. So I need to pay my wife for doing that. Like right. She needs a job. She needs to get paid for all the work that she's putting into it. So there was a cost there. But the other side of it too is we didn't, like I said, we didn't want just the random person sort of picking up the app and then like tagging, you know, their graffiti that they just threw up on the wall, unless it's actually good graffiti. And in that sort of circumstance, you do have to put a barrier for entry. And in this case, that's the price. And we tried to price it out so that it's easy to be serious about it. So we're targeting right now $2.99 a month, which is, I admit, it's a very steep price for an app that you're subscribed to, but it's only $25 a year. That's, you know, the idea being that 30% savings, that's going to target those folks out there that actually want to have that in their pockets so that they're traveling and no matter where they go, they can pull it out and see all the awesome spots around them and set up their plan for their shoots and their days to make the most of their vacation, because they put their hard money into a vacation. What's $25 a year to know that when you land anywhere in the world that you paid, you know, thousands of dollars to get to, that you're going to have a great time taking pictures while you're there.
Right. And the two main lessons that I'm trying to teach my kids is hard work is never wasted. And B, you can pay too little for sushi.
That's right.
And so if sushi is $2 for all you can eat, then just go ahead and walk away. So for something like this, I don't think $3 a month or $25 for the year is unreasonable at all, because, well, you're paying for that QC, the quality control.
Exactly. And that's what we hope is the case, too, for the folks out there. And as the app grows and the user base grows, then we can hire on professionals to review this imagery, not just us, but mm-hmm. we can, you know, actually I can pay photographers to actually review the locations, because I don't want to just MTurk it. That's where you hire, like, you know, somebody in some far flung country to review the imagery. I want to make sure that people that are looking at it have an eye and know what they're looking at, know what would be of interest to other photographers.
And if you want to just try it.
30 months, that'd be ridiculous. 30 days free trial mm-hmm. right out of the gate. So you can download the app as soon as we launch and you can use it for a month and see if it does everything that you hope and want it to. And all I would say on that is, if for any reason it doesn't, please, you know, let us know. We want people to be as critical as possible on this, because we wanted to build an app that serves, you know, everybody's needs out there. It solves a problem, frankly, that I had. And as I said to my wife at the very early set, is I don't really care if other people use it. I need it.
Sure.
You know, and that's really the foundation, the ground. I'm not trying to make a bajillion dollars out of this. I just got sick of wasting weekends with my kids in the back trying to find places to take pictures.
I mean, sounds like your kids would have funded this, actually. Now, what is the release date? You said it's tentatively April the 6th?
Yeah, that's what we're targeting right now. We have two major components left to build into the app. That's the categorization feature, where you can pick abandoned places versus architecture. Mm-hmm. And the other piece is getting that coalescing, or the combining of the pins when you zoom out down pat, because as it is right now in the beta, you see, like, you know, 50 pins in your geographic area. But if you move to the left or right on the map, it takes a second, and then 50 new pins appear. We want to make sure that you see all of the locations as soon as you open the app, so you understand the value of what you've just downloaded.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this, more than likely go check it out. It's probably a couple days away when you're hearing this.
Yep. Pixioapp.com. PIXEOAPP.com. All the information's there. And the follow-up on that is, please subscribe to the newsletter. I'm not spamming you every week or every day. If you subscribe to the newsletter, that's just going to send you an email when it's ready for you to download.
Okay, and check it out. And we'll put a link to that on our show notes. So, Sean, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, Alan. Thank you so much for having me.
And we're back.
Okay.
Adam, that you've probably listened to that on your way down, or the way home from Disneyland on the plane.
I don't think it was published yet.
No, well, I gave you an advance copy, let's be honest.
Okay, sure. Yeah, then yes.
Then no, you still didn't. You probably watched some sort of whatever. You probably watched a Melissa McCarthy movie on the plane. Her movies seem to be on the plane all the time, and they're good. Very funny. But,
okay.
But check out his app, Pixio, it's called. We'll put a link to it on the site. 30 days free for our listeners.
Sweet.
Also for everybody else. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, really
exclusive,
not
to the two hosers.
Exclusive to anybody who signs up.
Okay.
Yes. And we'll put his personal website up there. Check that out as well. He takes very good photos. And we actually spoke. So after the interview, we actually spoke for even longer. The interview went for, what was it, a half hour? We spoke for even longer off mic. Well, no, it was a mic, but we didn't record it. Off the record, I suppose. And sure. I can tell you that for him, making this app is a substantial investment.
Okay.
Both time, definitely time. It's very time intensive. There's a lot going on here, but there's also a lot of money involved. a lot more than I would have imagined. So it is, you know, you can see, hopefully you can see where the quality is, and this isn't just some, you know, lousy $1 app or something like that. This is, he's really put a lot of thought and effort into making this a solid app, if you're into apps.
Okay.
You know what the worst part of apps are?
The name.
Saying app.
Yeah.
You sound like kind of a, someone who says app a lot. So anyways, right. Check it out. Pixio, pixioapp. I'm not even sure what the website is.
You're going to put a link.
I'll put a link. Check it out. All right. Photo challenge for next week is our monthly challenge, Dutch Angle. So you can hashtag that on Instagram at Hey Hosers or Two Hosers Monthly Challenge or both. Better both. And then we're definitely going to get it.
Yeah. Why not?
Definitely going to check that out. So put that up. We'll talk about that next week. Websites. Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtridge.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com. We can find the photos, links, and everything else we just talked about. And that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.